Well, good morning, everyone. It's just about 15 minutes after 10 o'clock. And what we will do this morning is go straight into our regularly scheduled program this morning, our brand new program here on Heartbeat. It's Medicine Made Simple with Dr. Alexandra Ames. And like I've been telling you all week long, we're going to be talking this morning about those things that we don't like to talk about. Alrighty, this is Marcy Miranda with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon on Matters of the Heart. Good morning on my sunshine people. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on Heartbeat. And thank you very much, Candy, for Heartbeat Sunrise. It's our turn. I'm so happy to be able to bring this program to you. We are actually happy to bring it to you here on Heartbeat. It's the first of a kind on Heartbeat for a long time. And it's an opportunity for you to call in and ask our medical doctor in studio, Dr. Alexandra Ames, who has so kindly offered to spend this time with us. And you know how busy doctors are, right? We all do. And she has taken this time out to come to spend with you, to listen to your issues and help you in whatever way. And what we do is every week we choose a topic to kind of guide you in a direction. However, if there is something else that you're having a really major issue with, perhaps an emergency or something that needs to be dealt with, feel free to call us on it, okay? At 222-1035. But guess what, folks? This morning we decided that we're going to chat about things that are embarrassing to us, right, Dr. Ames?
Good morning, Marcy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good today. Thank you. How are you?
Great. I'm good. I'm okay. But just in
having
case,
some embarrassing problems.
Yes, apparently. But just in case I'm not okay, I'm in the right company. I can attest to that. Yep. And I apologize for last week as well.
No
problem. That was something that was just so unavoidable, and it just happened, you know, just like that.
Well, I'm glad you're better.
And these are the kind of things that we want people to talk about. I'll just share with you quickly, guys, what happened. I have a back issue, an old injury that just came back, you know. And the thing about it, though, I shouldn't say it just came back. I kind of detected that it was coming at me because it's something that was recommended I should do surgery for. Opted not to do the surgery. And I know that I'm supposed to be paying attention to it and being more aware of the signs that I get if it's getting a little out of hand. And I didn't.
Okay.
I did not pay attention to those signs. And so it came back at me. And these are the kind of things that we want to talk about this morning. If there are things, there are signs that you're getting, they may be embarrassing things, but guess what? They just may be symptoms of a bigger issue, right? So we're talking about those things that are embarrassing this morning. You know what I'm talking about. We're talking about things like bad odors, you know, incontinence, flatulence, impotence, what else? A whole load of things that we don't particularly like to talk about too much, not even to our doctors. But this morning, anonymously, you can call in at 222-1035, Dr. Ames. Let's start. Where should we start?
Should we start with flatulence or farting?
Yeah. I like that.
We're gonna talk so, very frankly so this
very
morning.
Very frankly this morning. That's right. I guess now everybody knows exactly what we're talking about. So let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, farting is normal. We all fart. It's just, you know, passing wind through the back passage. And we also burp, just passing, again, gas that's, you know, from our gut through the mouth. And it is normal to do that. Sometimes some people may feel that they're farting excessively or that the gases are particularly noxious or smelly. And that can be for a number of reasons. Basically, the gas that you're passing is basically gas that's built up from normal bacteria that live in your gut, good bacteria that live in your gut, breaking down, helping being involved in the breaking down of food, okay? And so the gases that are produced are smelly gases. They're things like hydrogen, methane. Those are quite smelly, can smell like rotten eggs sometimes, hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, too much of sort of fermentable carbohydrates like bran or fruit tends to cause more wind or gas.
Right.
So you probably, maybe you haven't noticed personally, but I think we generally notice that if we eat lots of bran or fruit, sometimes we pass a bit of extra wind.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we can get particularly smelly or excessive farting because of the overgrowth of those good bacteria that I was talking about in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes if we're on an antibiotic for something else like a chest infection or a urine infection, that might kill some of the good bacteria, and other bacteria because there's less competition, can overgrow, and that can create a problem. Mm-hmm. And that can also be a particular problem if you've got irritable bowel syndrome. People have heard of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're constipated, that also increases wind. Or if you have had a recent infection like giardiasis or a recent gut infection, that can make, you know, the wind sort of more smelly.
Let me ask you something, Doctor. I've often heard it said that older people tend to pass gas a whole lot more. What causes that?
Often that's because of loss of muscle tone in the back passage or around the perineal area. So, you know, you and I might know, okay, right, we need to pass some wind and we have time to get to somewhere private, you know. But, you know, sometimes in elderly people, the muscles are a bit more lax, they're weaker, so things sort of escape, basically. And in fact, female runners, for some reason, interestingly, tend to have a bit of a problem. We don't really know why, but I suspect it's something to do with that.
Same thing?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but we're not entirely sure why, but definitely we know that commoner in female athletes, female runners.
Mm, that's a strange one.
Carbonated beverages can make it worse, so things like soda, so, you know, fizzy drinks, basically, because they contain carbon dioxide, which is one of the gases. Right, so if you're taking that in, it needs to be released somehow, so that can cause you to burp, that sort of thing. Certain drugs can as well. Some drugs can do it as well. I mean, we've already mentioned antibiotics.
So what can we do if we if we are one of those people who seem to be passing gas quite a lot, and it really is an embarrassing problem for us?
Well, it's kind of
something safe.
Well, you have sometimes watching how much bran or fruit you're eating. I mean, it's a tricky one because we're all being encouraged to increase fiber in our diets and, you know, have 5 to 8 portions of vegetables a day. So it's, but you know, if you think you've recently had antibiotics or you suffer with irritable bowel, there is some evidence, limited evidence, that probiotics work. Have you ever heard of probiotics?
You find that in some yogurts.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're actually man-made bacteria that you can buy a course of tablets, or sometimes people put them into yogurts. Lactobacilli is a common one, and the idea is that if you think that you're producing lots of wind because of the overgrowth of this bacteria, you are putting in another bacteria to kind of increase the competition, so to speak, so you don't have one. Basically what you're doing. And there's some evidence that it's helpful.
And what about sometimes I see advertised some medication. I never really paid much attention to what it is, but I have seen it.
It's known as Windies sometimes. Simeticone is the active ingredient. And basically what that does is it kind of, if you've got trapped wind, because you're, especially if you're constipated, so the other thing to do is to try to, you know, keep the bowels clear by drinking lots of water.
But let me ask you something, Doctor.
If
you're holding this thing for too long, it could be painful.
Very painful. I mean, wind can be seriously painful, trapped wind. And usually it's trapped, often because of constipation. But, and as I said, you know, to just get your constipated treated either by lifestyle measures such as exercise, which I know is paradoxical since I've just told you that female runners tend to have that problem, but exercise and, you know, fruits and veg and water. And the other thing is, sorry, what was the question, Marcy? I just kind of went...
No, it's all about whether it's...
Whether it's dangerous, Well, it depends what's causing the wind trapping or the obstruction, if you like. So, for example, if you have a great big tumour, that can actually cause full-blown bowel obstruction. And that's actually a problem where you're not farting. You know, your stomach becomes distended, nothing can get
past.
You stop farting, you can start vomiting because everything needs to get out somehow. So, you know, if you have a great big swollen tummy and vomiting and you're not passing any wind or not pass stool for 3 to 4 days, you need to go and find out what's causing
what's
causing that blockage.
Right. So therefore, if we find ourselves doing this a whole lot more than normal, we know it could be an indication of something that's not right. So you could probably check your diet.
Just farting. I mean, farting is normal, but it could be a recent infection or recent antibiotics.
Right.
But farting generally isn't dangerous. It's more the bowel obstruction that's the dangerous thing.
Right. And the same goes for belching, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, certainly belching can be associated with other conditions like heartburn, or if you heartburn is basically, you know, reflux where the yes. acid in the stomach goes up into the gullet mm-hmm. and one of the symptoms can be belching. Mm-hmm. So if you're belching a lot, especially if you have heartburn, that can be a sign that something else is going on as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something called a hiatus hernia as well, which is where, sorry.
Right. We have a caller, so let's see what our caller wants to find out. Hi, good morning. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. I'm listening to your program, mm-hmm. and I have a complaint a bit. I would like to find out something about it. I have a problem where if I pass a stool, and it's a bit hard, I will bleed a little.
Yes, okay.
And if it's soft, no bleeding.
Right.
So I'd like to know how I can help that, because I do eat a lot of fiber. I drink a lot of water.
Okay, good.
Thank you very much. I'll listen off here.
Okay, sure.
Okay, all right.
So I think the lady's question, my headphones weren't working at the start, but I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the lady's question was that sometimes if she passes a hard stool, mm-hmm. she gets a bit of bleeding from the back passage.
Mm-hmm. And pain, lot of pain.
She said pain as well, okay. Mm-hmm. So the commonest causes of that are piles, so hemorrhoids, which are basically sort of fleshy outpouching of skin mm-hmm. that overlie the blood vessels around the rectum or the mm-hmm. back passage. And what happens is if you pass a hard stool, that stool traumatizes or scrapes past that blood vessel, you know, covered in skin, and bleeds basically. Mm-hmm. So you mm-hmm. will tend to get bright red blood either in the pan or just after wiping. It tends not to be mixed in with the stool. Mm-hmm. And piles generally aren't painful unless they become thrombosed. That means the vein gets a big clot in it, and then you'll know about it because you'll mm-hmm. get a great big swollen lump outside the back passage that's really painful. The other common cause, if it's painful, is a tear, basically, or an anal fissure, it's called. So basically, if you imagine you're passing a great big hard stool, you can mm-hmm. tear the skin. The skin mm-hmm. around there is quite fragile, mm-hmm. and that can be incredibly painful. Mm-hmm. And several ways of treating it. The first thing to say is obviously stool softeners. So again, a diet high in fiber, lots of water, exercise, prunes, that sort of thing. If that's mm-hmm. not working, then you should see your doctor for a laxative to discuss what medication you're already on and what laxative or stool softener mm-hmm. might be good for you. So things like lactulose is a common one in this country. Mm-hmm. But lactulose is full of sugar.
But she says that she said that she uses a lot of fiber and stuff.
Yeah.
But
sometimes you need a bit more. Sometimes yeah. you need a bit more help. And the other thing is, rectal bleeding can occasionally be a sign of something slightly more sinister. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you are having rectal bleeding, I still would see your doctor for an examination. Occasionally, it can be a sign of a bleeding polyp higher up, or even something more serious like a colon cancer or a bowel cancer. However, I have to say that is not a common presentation mm-hmm. of a cancer. And usually there'd be other symptoms. So there'd be weight mm-hmm. loss. There'd be a change in bowel habit. And actually, it's more common to have loose stool rather than constipation with cancers. And the other thing is the blood tends to be mixed in with the stool rather than just on the outside of the mm-hmm. stool mm-hmm. or just in the pan.
Right.
Another common cause of blood in the stool can sometimes be something called Crohn's disease, also ulcerative colitis, which is basically mm-hmm. inflammation of the bowel or yeah. the back passage. Mm-hmm. So for various sort of reasons, you get ulcers forming on the inside of the back passage and these bleed, basically. Mm-hmm. And again, it tends to be associated with looser stool and, you know, fresh blood, but mixed yes. in with the stool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I would just see a doctor, but it's probably piles or a fissure.
Yeah, and I think too, and because I've often heard this through doc teams, that sometimes you really need to drink a little bit more water.
Yeah, you should yeah. be drinking 6 to 8.
Lots and
yeah.
lots of water. That certainly, I think, would help. And perhaps maybe, and from experience, when you drink a whole lot of water, you'll realize that the stool will not be that hard. And that
exactly.
day when it's hard, it's probably a day when
you're just dehydrated.
Did not.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So that's another thing. And maybe we could just slip in here too, that it's a good idea for us to check our stool ever so often.
Yeah, just have a look at it, see what yeah. color it is. Mm-hmm. Because if it's very, very pale, that can be a sign of something being wrong, like for example gallstones, if the stool is very, very black, and I'm talking really black, I'm talking black and sticky very and tarry, thick. Not just dark brown, and it's smelly as well, that can sometimes be a sign that you're bleeding higher up in the stomach, because that black, thick, tarry stuff is actually digested blood. And we have a special name for it. It's called melina. So it's worth just every so often having a glance, looking to see what's going on, seeing, you know, if things are very pale or very, very, very dark, or, you know, if there's blood there. That's all really important. That's a really good point, Marcia.
Okay, so we're chatting here with Dr. Ames, and what we're talking about is some of the embarrassing things. And happily, we had a caller who had no problem with discussing about stool, because, of course, it is indicative of our health.
Yeah.
So if there's anything at all, we have in studio Dr. Ames. If you're having any condition at all that you are concerned about, please call us now. We're going to be here until 11. Dr. Ames has so wonderfully and generously given us this time here to share with us, and we should be more than willing to help you. Yeah. Let's go to
The next thing. I think another common thing I get asked about is bad breath. I mean, I'm not a dentist, but there are lots of different causes of bad breath besides problems in the mouth. There can be problems in the stomach, for example. So heartburn can sometimes cause bad breath. We mentioned heartburn. Sometimes nasal infections, so sinusitis, can cause, you know, bad breath, because your, you know, the nose and the mouth are connected. Sometimes something called the Helicobacter pylori infection, which is, we've mentioned this on the program before, it's a little bacteria that lives in the gut and causes inflammation and heartburn. But generally, if it's coming from the mouth, it's due to either really poor teeth hygiene, so not brushing, not flossing, getting gum disease, so the gums bleed a lot. That can be a sign that you need to see your dentist. Also, sulfur buildup on the tongue. So one trick is, if you're having problems with bad breath, is to actually brush your tongue.
And scrape it or something.
And you can even buy tongue scrapers in pharmacies and things.
And flossing.
Yeah, flossing is really important. Yeah, sure, we have a call.
So we have a call. Good morning. Hello, good morning. Ooh,
Hello,
could you could you just do us a little favor? We still want to help you, but could you turn your radio down, please? All right, got it? Okay,
we lost him.
Okay, let me just share with the listeners that when you call in, please turn your radios down, because we get a serious feedback in here, and we have headphones on our ears, and it really hurts when we get that screech. So call us again at 222-1035. That's 222-1035. Doctor.
Another increasingly common cause of bad breath is actually a high protein diet. A lot of these people on these fad crash diets or high protein diets, what happens is you put your body into a starvation state, and you start to breathe out something called ketones. And those have a really kind of sick, sweet kind of smell. And in fact, actually, that can be a way of finding out that you've got type 1 diabetes, because in type 1 diabetes, you basically go into starvation state. You start breathing out these ketones, this sweet kind of, almost like rotten bananas sort of smelling. And that can be a sign of either diabetes, or that you know your diet is a little too extreme. And then obviously, you know, certain foods. So we all know the garlic, the onions, all that sort of thing can increase the bad breath problem. And, you know, always see your dentist if you have any bleeding gums or any issues, you know, regularly for a checkup.
And if you're concerned about whether you have bad breath or not, there are easy ways to finding out. You can put your hand to your mouth, to your nose, and just breathe and smell it. And of course, if you do, then you could do something about it so that other people will not be affected.
Yeah, and interestingly, a lot of people complain about morning breath. And actually, morning breath doesn't mean there's anything wrong. What happens is your mouth is continuously shedding cells from the lining of the inside of the mouth. And when you sleep, you're not producing as much saliva, you're not drinking as much. So all that those kind of dead cells that we can't really see kind of build up on the inside of our mouths. And that's why some people complain about this morning breath. So they don't necessarily have bad breath at any other time of the day, but when they wake up in the morning, they kind of, you know, don't like the smell.
And maybe you should go brush your teeth before you have your coffee and stuff like that. Don't do like the movies.
And obviously coffee and smoking makes bad breath worse. Yes, you know, didn't mention that, but that's really important. You know.
Yeah, good. Next on our list of things that appear to be embarrassing and we don't want to talk about. But before we go there, let's take a call.
Okay.
Good morning.
Hello, good morning, lady.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, I'm calling to find out what people could do about snoring.
Ah, right, snoring. Yeah.
Yes, we're going to... You're going to
listen on it.
Very well. Thank you for calling. Okay.
Okay, so snoring is a common problem. It can be embarrassing, especially with new partners. Mm-hmm. So the first thing to say is if you're overweight, lose weight. Because if you're carrying excess weight, that presses on the neck and can collapse the airway at the back of, you know, the back of the throat, basically. And that's what causes snoring. The other thing to do is to try and avoid alcohol late at night. So alcohol relaxes the back of the throat. And when that kind of collapses a bit, that can cause that noise, the snoring noise. Stop smoking. Smoking can make that worse. And what I will say is that if you think you might be excessively sleepy during the day, I mean, we talked about this last week when we talked about sleep problems. But if you feel, oh my God, I fall asleep at the wheel of the car, or I, you know, fall asleep in a theater when nobody else is asleep, or, you know, after a lunch but without alcohol. You know, if you think you're excessively sleepy, it's worth seeing your doctor to do something called a sleep score or an Epworth sleep score. And actually, I think I said I was going to give it to you to put on the website so people could actually just do it on the website. And if you look as though you're having excessive daytime sleepiness, so not just, you know, a bit of an after lunch kind of lull, but, you know, generally sleeping when you shouldn't be, it may be that you need to have a test, which can be done at home, to see if you are stopping breathing at night or if you have something called obstructive sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. And basically what happens is your airway actually, instead of just sort of partially collapsing, completely collapses, and you actually stop breathing. And the brain detects this because it realizes, oh my God, you know, the person's not breathing, kind of wakes you up, and you wake up but not fully to take a deep breath. And sometimes your partner will say, you know, you do this really funny thing at night where you suddenly I stop hearing you snore for like 10 seconds and suddenly you make a choking sound, or you suddenly take a gasp or whatever. And because you're waking up all the time to do that, you're not getting, you know, the full benefit of sleep, and you feel really sleepy the next day. And there are masks and things which you can wear over the nose and over the mouth to help with that as well. So that's an important thing about snoring.
Yeah, agree. So I hope that answers your question. Make sure that, and a lot of people say, I snore only when I'm really tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, that is true. If you're excessively tired, you know, you go into deeper sleep, and therefore the muscles at the back of the throat get more relaxed. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. So you know that you heard the things, right, Cola, that you have to do. You have to, if you know that you're overweight, try and lose a little bit of weight and try not to drink alcohol later on in the evening. You know, if you know that you are excessively tired. What about sleeping on this? People say depending on the position that you sleep.
I mean, if you sleep on your side, that's less likely to happen because you don't have the full effects of gravity. But, you know, it's still, if you are still having a problem, it's worth seeing your doctor for that sleep score.
Definitely. Yeah. Alrighty. So I hope that answers your question. Call us 222-1035. Feel free to call us here at Heartbeat. Okay.
So the next thing we wanted to talk about was impotence or erectile dysfunction, which you know, can be a very, very common problem that men really don't like to talk about. So up to 50% of men between the ages of 40 and 70 will have some kind of
impotence.
Yeah. And by this, what do we mean by impotence? Well, we basically mean difficulty either getting a full erection or maintaining a full erection. And basically, how do we get an erection? Well, basically, if you become sexually aroused, the brain becomes aroused and it sends a chemical message via the nerves that supply the penis to release something called cyclic GMP. And that basically makes the veins in the penis swell or dilate so that blood rushes to the penis and engorges it, and that causes an erection. So basically things that can cause problems with that would be if the blood supply is in some way not completely working. Mm-hmm. Just like you can have problems with the blood supply to the heart, just like you can have problems with the blood supply to the legs, you can have problems with the blood supply to the penis. And in fact, men who have impotence problems because of that, that can actually be a sign that there may be something going on in the heart as well. So don't just ignore it. Go to your doctor and get checked out. Mm-hmm. Another common cause of that might be diabetes. Can cause problems, again, because it causes cholesterol buildup on the blood vessels that supply the penis. The other problem can be hormonal, which is sort of rare, but sometimes people have testosterone deficiencies. But there are drugs that people take for various other problems that can cause this, deficiencies in the active testosterone that you need for erections. So, for example, men who have male pattern balding sometimes take a drug called Propecia. And the way that works is it stops testosterone being converted into a more active form of testosterone. And if that's happening, then you might have a problem with your erections. And a good way of telling if this is the case is whether or not you're getting morning erections. So if you're getting full morning erections, that probably isn't the problem. And sometimes that can mean that there's actually a psychological problem instead of a hormonal problem or a blood problem or a nerve supply problem. Mm-hmm. So the first thing to think about is if you're having problems, is this sudden? If it's suddenly you had no problem up until yesterday and then mm-hmm. suddenly today there's a big problem, it can be because of stress. So psychological reasons, stress, depression, relationship problems, sometimes alcohol. So if you've had a big night out and you find you can't perform as you would like, that can sometimes be the cause of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because, we talked about the blood supply, all the things we always talk about that affect the heart, so things like smoking, high blood pressure, diabetes, these can all affect your erections. And there are treatments, and it's important to find the underlying cause as well. So that's really important. And in fact, lots of drugs can cause a problem. So if you are on certain drugs for blood pressure and called beta blockers, so people might know these as atenolol or propranolol, those are a big cause of erectile dysfunction. And actually, quite often when I see men and their blood pressure isn't controlled, and I look at them and I say, well, we've got you on some drugs for this. How come, they're not working anymore? Are you taking them? And they look at you and they kind of go a bit red.
No, because it's affecting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they figure this out pretty quickly.
Yes.
Just talking to your doctor if you think the drug might be a problem. Sometimes just switching the type of drug can help. The other thing, interestingly, is weed, ganja, pot, we talk about this all mm-hmm. the time. It is actually, it gets converted into weak estrogen. So if you think about it, that's the female hormone. So that can cause a problem with erections. And actually,
okay, guys, I hope you hear that.
Oh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about nerve damage?
Yeah, nerve damage. So people who've had surgery in that area, sometimes for the prostate, mm-hmm. people who've had radiotherapy for prostate trouble, they can damage the nerves that allow that chemical signal to be sent that allow that hormone I mentioned, the cyclic GMP, to be released to let the blood vessels dilate. So, that can spinal injuries or fractured pelvis, because the nerves that supply the penis kind of go through the pelvis. And sometimes if you've had a broken pelvis, the nerves can get damaged. That can all be a problem. But the good news is there are loads of treatments for this now. Mm-hmm. I mean, most men will have heard of good old Viagra. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of different similar drugs to Viagra.
Yeah.
One
mm-hmm.
is called Levitra, another one is called Cialis. There are loads of different ones. Mm-hmm. And basically the way they work is they allow this cyclic GMP that I was talking about, they have an effect on that so that the vasodilation is encouraged. So in other words, the blood vessels are allowed to widen so that the penis can fill mm-hmm. with blood. And interestingly, they only work if you are sexually aroused. So don't worry, you won't take a Viagra and go to the grocery and have a problem, unless, there's a hot woman in the line in front of you, I guess. But generally, you need some kind of sexual arousal and you have to take them. It depends on which one you're taking. Viagra, it depends. It can be anything from 15 minutes before to an hour before, depending on which of those drugs, the Viagra, the Levitra, the Cialis that you're using. Mm-hmm. So you need some kind of sexual arousal. They take a little while to work. And they're also really useful, even if your problem isn't with the blood vessels, it's actually with the nerves. So I actually had a couple of young men I was treating abroad who you know, had terrible motorcycling accidents, young men like in their 30s, you know, had to self-catheterize because they had no nerve control at all in that area. And they found Viagra really helpful because you don't actually need the nerve supply because it's the nerves that tell, you know, allow the cyclic GMP to be released. So if you have a drug that's letting that happen anyway, you know, they can even get erections even without a nerve supply.
Interesting. Yeah. Very really interesting.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you one thing though. I had heard that there was some negative reactions to these drugs with people uncertain.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously these drugs are on prescription, so you need to go to see your doctor because there are certain conditions which mean you can't have them. So if you had a very recent heart attack, you shouldn't be on those drugs without talking to your doctor first. If you have very uncontrolled blood pressure, so in other words, your blood pressure is ridiculously high, you have to be careful with things like Viagra. And then other medicines can interact with them. So the classic one is something called the nitrites medications, which some people are on for their heart, can interact with them. So you need to obviously go and have a discussion with your doctor about other medicines you're on and other medical conditions you have. And they can also sometimes cause a headache and flushing, especially the first time you use them. So we usually start off on a really low dose, and if it's well tolerated and you're not getting the kind of results you want, we slightly increase the dose. So it's a bit of trial and error, but they can cause headaches.
So guys, remember that if you want to go on these drugs, you really should not just go to the drugstore and take it over the counter. You should go to your doctor, especially if you're an older person, an older guy. You know, everybody wants you to enjoy your life, but your sex, your life. But at the same time, you do want to take care of your body and you don't want to be at risk. So make sure you go see your doctor first, right? That's what Dr. Eames is saying to you. 222-1035. Feel free to call us if you have any questions you want to ask Dr. Eames.
Yeah. I mean, other more sort of old-fashioned treatments involved, there were injections into the base of the penis and vacuum devices and things like that, but we hardly ever use those anymore, thankfully, because of Viagra. Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
For these poor fellas.
Yeah.
All right. So let's just take a call, doctor.
Sure.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Marcia.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And good morning, doctor.
I like your accent. I want to talk about,
All right, thank you.
Perspiration.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that.
You listen off air? Right.
Okay. So just, and we're going to talk about perspiration next, but just to recap on the impotence. So basically, you need to think about whether it's sudden, whether it's been gradual, whether or not you still have morning erections, and go and see your doctor. Another funny common cause is cyclists. So if you go on really long cycle rides, that can temporarily cause a problem as well. So don't be alarmed if you're one of these middle-aged men in Lycra and you go for a long cycle ride and, you know, find things aren't working shortly after.
You mean because you have on something
tight? Yeah, because of the saddle. No, because of the saddle compressing those nerves, the same nerves that supply the penis.
Alrighty.
Yeah. So, excessive sweating. Sometimes that's called hyperhidrosis is the medical term for it. It's made some people just sweat more from their palms of their hands and their soles and also their armpits and sometimes their face and their scalp. And that's sometimes called primary hyperhidrosis. In other words, there's no real underlying cause. It just kind of happens. And if that's the reason for it, it usually starts before the age of 25. It's usually symmetrical. So it won't be one palm or one sole. It's both, you know, it's both hands, it's both feet. And there are loads of different lifestyle measures that you can use to try to help this. So one is having cold baths or showers because that reduces the pore size so you sweat less. The other thing is using an antiperspirant instead of a deodorant, and they are two different things. Mm-hmm. So a deodorant just kind of masks smell, but an antiperspirant actually stops you from sweating. The other thing is wearing cotton clothing that breathes. And some people, if they have excessive sweating from the armpits, can actually get sweat pads. So these are like little pads that you can buy in the pharmacy, especially if you're wearing sort of a nice, you know, silk shirt or something. You don't want to get stains on, deodorant stains on, and you can pop them in to absorb the fluid. Mm-hmm. The other thing is there's sort of aluminium treatments. And what that is like that's like an industrial strength antiperspirant, if you like, that's got aluminium in it, and aluminium basically blocks the sweat pores. That's how it works. You can buy them in the pharmacies, or they're prescribable, you know, from your doctor, and you can actually roll them onto the palms of the hands or the soles of the feet. Sometimes it's better to put them on at night because you don't sweat as much as at night, and you put them on every day for a certain amount of time, and then you can cut down to sort of every 1 to 3 weeks, and those can be really helpful. People will also have heard about Botox. So that's quite useful for armpit sweating. So you can go along to doctors who are trained to do it, and they can basically inject you with botulinum toxin, which paralyzes muscle. That's how it works, and so it stops you sweating. Sometimes there's even surgical options that people will probably read about or hear about. Those are kind of extreme, but you can basically cut off the nerve supply that causes you to sweat, especially to the palms, and that can help sometimes, but that's a little bit extreme.
Well, that's extreme.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme, yeah. What else can you do? There's a funny treatment. I've never actually seen this done, but apparently you can do something called iontophoresis, and basically you put your hands in this vat of water, and they pass an electric current through it. And apparently that helps. We don't really know how it helps, but it's been shown to help. Can cause sort of pins and needles, but, you know, don't even know if it's available in Trinidad, to be honest. I just thought I'd mention it just out of interest.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I will mention about sweating is, when do you have to be worried that there might be an underlying problem? So if you're waking up at night, sort of soaking the bed, perspiring from head to foot, you know, drenched and having to change the bed clothes or the pajamas, that might be a sign that there's an underlying medical cause, you know, not just when you're a bit anxious and your palms get a bit sweaty, but sometimes some cancers can present like that, especially lymphoma. Sometimes infections like TB can cause that problem, and obviously also the menopause, thyroid problems. So just think about, if it is literally just your hands, your feet, your armpits, when you're a bit more nervous and anxious, that's not so much of a problem. But if you're losing weight and waking up drenching the bed, you need to go and see your doctor.
It's nothing to worry about.
No.
If you have excessive sweating.
No.
That's just the way you are.
Yeah.
So you just find a way to deal with it.
Yeah.
More than likely the easiest way, an antiperspirant.
Yeah.
You know, not
and
a
the
deodorant.
Other the other thing is apparently white and black clothing tend to show up sweat marks less. So you can try.
I see some guys even wearing, like, under their shirts, they wear a t-shirt.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that absorbs the sweat.
Yeah.
So it doesn't.
All those sort of things. A bit like the sweat pads,
just
make sure they're cotton.
Yeah, and just, yeah, exactly, make sure it's cotton, and you know, always wear a carry with you a rag, you know, discreetly, and ever so often, you know, wipe your head if you're having, because a lot of guys now with the little bowl heads and stuff, so just wipe the head and so on. That's the best. But I think that sweating is good because it's releasing toxins, so
It's normal to sweat. It's normal to sweat, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So let's go on to male pattern baldness.
Well, actually, just before we go on to that, just because while we're talking about sweating, body odor might be a good thing to talk about. Just because I think people often are afraid to talk about, they think that they smell more than others, and some people do. And sweat itself doesn't smell. It's actually the bacteria on the skin that causes sweat to smell. So, you know, just remind you, obviously, you shower or bathe at least once a day. I mean, we're in a hot country, I think ideally twice a day, because soap kills the bacteria. So, you know, and then losing weight helps with body odor as well, because if you've got less, sort of carrying less fat, you sweat less. And obviously, shaving the armpits also helps as well if you have a real problem with, you know,
your
smelly
sweat, yeah.
Yeah,
because it traps bacteria in
exactly. and the hair, it's sort of like fur, isn't it? It sort of retains heat, it traps heat, so yeah, that's why.
I wonder why we have hair on the armpits.
Well, we're mammals, I guess, you know.
So lose your weight and shave on the armpits.
And soap.
Things like soap.
Soap, yeah.
All right, soap and water.
Yeah, babe. Check for diabetes as well again.
All righty. So can we go then to back to male pattern baldness?
Yeah, sure. Well, we kind of briefly mentioned this when we talked about the impotence, because some of the drugs for male pattern baldness can cause impotence, didn't we?
Right.
But basically what we mean by male pattern baldness is sort of, you know, the receding hairline, that you see as men get older that starts to happen. And it basically is due to not actually too much testosterone, which is what people often think, but actually how sensitive your hair follicles are to the testosterone. And so it tends to be familial, so it tends to run in families. And actually, mm-hmm. women can get it as well.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not a problem in terms of it being dangerous at all. But, you know, some men, it makes them feel a little self-conscious. So one of the things that you can use to treat it is a drug called minoxidil. Some people might know it as Rogaine or Regaine. You've probably mm-hmm. seen it advertised on the television. Yeah. And it's a vasodilator. So basically what it does is it increases, it allows the blood flow to the scalp and the follicles to increase, and that helps bring nutrients to encourage hair growth. It doesn't always work, but it sometimes can be helpful. You have to use it for quite a while. It can be expensive. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, once you stop using it, the hair growth, the hair loss continues. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is one of the... One thing I will say about baldness in general, so male pattern baldness is only one type of baldness, mm-hmm. is sometimes if you have thinning hair, it can be a sign of an underlying vitamin deficiency, like iron deficiency especially, or a thyroid problem. So if you find your hair is suddenly just generally thinning, it might be worthwhile going to your doctor to see if you've got an iron deficiency anemia or if you've got a thyroid problem.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And I don't want us to run out of time before we talk about perhaps something that's really, really embarrassing, and that's urinary incontinence. And that probably we could also touch on bedwetting at the same time, you know? That?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, urinary incontinence just basically means we leak urine when we don't want to.
Yeah.
And there are two main types. There's urge incontinence as well. Let's start with stress incontinence. And that's when you basically leak urine if you... laugh or cough or jump or exercise. And it's basically due to a weak pelvic floor muscle. So women will be familiar with this after they've had babies. It can happen.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. Loads of people suffer with it. As many as 1 in 5 women over the age of 40 will have some sort of incontinence. And really, what you can do is, first of all, just make sure there's no urine infection. So again, see your doctor, just make sure there's no urine infection, no other cause, and have a vaginal exam to check and see if there's any prolapse, because sometimes surgery can help. But if it's just general weakness of the pelvic floor, which is, you know, what normally happens, there's something called training, basically. So what you do is it's pelvic floor exercises. Mm-hmm. So you basically, you sit or lie with your legs slightly apart, and you basically pretend that you're stopping your urine. Mm-hmm. So, and you're supposed to do sort of this sort of 50 times for 1 second, right? I know, crazier. 50 times for 1 second, and then 10 times for 5 seconds. And you're supposed to do this 3 times a day. And clinical trials have shown that if you do it for 4 months, it can make a huge difference.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
How often you have to do that in one day?
3 times a day.
Oh, that's not too bad. Yeah. That's not too bad.
You can do it sitting in the car. Or,
it's just that 50 times in 1 second.
No, not 50 times in 1 second. You hold for 1 second for 50 times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I know. No. Not 50 times in one. That would be impossible.
I was just wondering. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
The other common cause of urinary incontinence is something called urge incontinence. So this is not because of weak pelvic floor muscles. This is actually because the bladder is irritable. So the bladder is basically a reservoir that collects urine from the kidneys. And when it's time to pass urine, it's a muscle, so it contracts. And normally the way we stop ourselves from passing urine is because we have control of the urethra, the opening from the bladder that allows us to expel urine. But and normally it can take, 400 mils of urine, and you pass urine maybe 3 or 4 times a day. Some people find they need to go like every hour, and they're passing smaller amounts. So if you find you're going much more often, you suddenly feel like, oh my God, I really gotta go now. And you've got to rush to the loo, or you might leak. Mm-hmm. And you're only passing a small amount of urine. That's urge incontinence. And that can be for a number of reasons. So it's important to go see your doctor and just rule out problems with urine infections and diabetes. But if all causes are ruled out, several things you can do. One is bladder training. So What that means is if you know that you tend to go every hour, you put off going for like an hour and 10 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes, and you gradually sort of extend the time, and you're basically retraining the bladder into being, into accepting a larger volume of urine. Mm-hmm. And there are drugs as well that can help.
Yeah. Wonderful. And I was thinking, I'm seeing here we wanted to talk about vaginal discharges, mm-hmm. but I was wondering, doctor, if we could, because we're running out of time now, yeah. I know you got to get over to your office,
yeah.
and I was wondering if we could next week probably talk, because we did say we wanted to do menopause.
Yeah, we did.
Maybe we can do vaginal infections.
Yeah, absolutely.
And menopause, yeah. next thing. I think ladies would love if we do that. If we focus on that. So before we close off, because it's just about a minute before, well, it's 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Just quickly, because I know we see this and we wonder, what's wrong with that person? They're going crazy or something like that. People who have itchy bottoms.
Yeah.
I know this is something that people don't like to talk about. Yeah. So let's just touch on it quickly before we close off.
I mean, you know, you have this urge to scratch your bottom. Sometimes I think Nadal has it. You ever watch him play tennis? So basically, the two commonest causes would be piles or hemorrhoids, which we briefly discussed. Mm-hmm. They can itch, and also worms. So children with itchy bottoms, quite often it's a sign of worms. And basically it's the eggs of the worms around the skin causing irritation. That's what it is.
What worms are these?
You know, just the common thread worms that children get. If you find your child scratching their bottom, it might mean that they have worms. So take them to the doctor.
So it really is true when people say that your child has worms.
Maybe. I mean, I don't believe in worming children. You know, there's a trend in Trinidad that people give worming medicine before they start. No, you don't need to do that. You know, but you know.
So what do you do then?
You don't have to do anything unless you find that there's a problem. So you don't assume. You don't sort of assume they've got worms and give them worm medicine before the start of every term. Like, people do that.
Yeah, of course.
People do that. But it's sort of an old wives' tale, but you do not need to do that.
Okay,
please,
so we
don't
need to
subject
that.
The poor children to worming medicine.
Okay, so stop it.
Yeah, stop it. But if you see them scratching their bottoms, or they're losing weight, or sometimes you can even see the worms in the stool, in the feces, mm-hmm. then take them to their doctor to be tested for some treatment. And the whole house needs to be treated as well, the whole household.
Really?
Yeah, because it's quite contagious. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, glad you gave us that information there and all the other information this way. And so next week we're going to deal with vaginal infections.
Yep.
And also
menopause.
We're going to be dealing with menopause. So, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen to us next week. Wednesday, Dr. Alexandra Ames is going to be with us, God's will, from 10:15 to 11 o'clock next week, Wednesday, right here on Medicine Made Simple. Thanks to everyone who called in. We want to hear some more calls from you. We want to hear you interjecting a little bit more into the program.
I think people were really too embarrassed to call.
But the thing is, you know, that you're very, very, very thorough. So that's why it's so difficult for people to, what can I ask again? She's touching on everything. And we really are grateful for that. But next week, really want to hear your questions. And of course, as I said before, if you want to send them ahead of time, you could send them to marcia@heartbeatt.com, heartbeatradiott.com. Or you can send it to our, message it on our Facebook page, or call me before the program and I'll take a note of it, or call on the program at 222-1035. Dr. Ames.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Pleasure.
Have yourself a blessed day.
You too.
And thanks for all the information. Alrighty. Okay, so this is Heartbeat 103.5 FM, Radio for Women and the Men Who Love Them. This has been Medicine Made Simple on Heartbeat.